Good morning and welcome to the lectionary call-in for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, where two pastors and a layperson, that would be me, discuss the gospel lectionary for the coming Sunday. And this Sunday happens to be Palm Sunday, March 24th. And we're doing our best to be faithful to lectionary year B, which puts us in the sixth Sunday of Lent in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 14. And we're going to read chapter 14, verses 1 through chapter 15, verses 47. And here's how it works. The designated lead person provides a list of three formative questions for us to consider. And then we gather on Tuesday around 6:30 a.m., where our little team takes up to 50 minutes to encourage, listen, and challenge each other. And here are the folks joining me today.
Bill Hall in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Nicole Parton Abdenor, Tampa, Florida.
And I'm Sarah Mickelson, and I happen to be the lead this week. And this is a really long passage from Mark, so we will be sharing the reading. Thank you very much to my friends here. I'm reading from the Revised Standard Version, and I'm going to start with Mark chapter 14, verse 1. Now, it was 2 days before Passover and the Festival of Unleavened Bread. The chief priests and the scribes were looking for a way to arrest Jesus by stealth and kill him, for they said, "Not during the festival, for there will be a riot among the people." So while he was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, he sat at the table, and a woman came with an alabaster jar, a very costly ointment of nard. And she broke the jar open and poured the ointment on his head. But some who were there said to one another in anger, "Why was this ointment wasted this way? For this ointment could have been sold for more than 300 denarii and the money given to the poor." And they scolded her. And Jesus said, "Leave her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has performed a good service for me. For you always have the poor with you, and you can show kindness to them whenever you choose. But she has anointed my body beforehand for burial. For what she has done, she has anointed my body beforehand for burial. Truly, I tell you, whenever the good news is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in remembrance of her." Then Judas Iscariot, who was one of the 12, went to the chief priests in order to betray him to them. And when they heard it, they were greatly pleased and promised to give him money. So he began to look for an opportunity to betray him. On the first day of unleavened bread, when the Passover lamb was sacrificed, his disciples said to him, "Where do you want us to go and make preparation for you to eat Passover?" So he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, "Go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him, and wherever he enters, say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks, where is my guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he will show you to a large room upstairs, furnished and ready. Make preparations for us there." So the disciples set out and went into the city and found everything as he had told them, and they prepared the Passover meal. When it was evening, he came with the 12. And when they had taken their places and were eating, Jesus said, "Truly, I tell you, one of you will betray me, and one who is eating with me." And they began to be distressed and say to him one after the other, "Surely not I." And he said to them, "It is one of the 12, one who is dipping bread into the bowl with me. For the Son of Man goes as it is written of him. But woe to that one by whom the Son of Man will be betrayed. It would have been better for that one not to have been born." And while they were eating, he took a loaf of bread, and after blessing it, he broke it and he gave it to them and said, "Take, this is my body." And then he took a cup, and after giving thanks, he gave it to them, and all of them drank from it. And he said, "This was my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many. Truly, I tell you, I will never drink of the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it anew in the kingdom of God." And when they had sung the hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives, and Jesus said to them, "Will all of you become deserters, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will scatter. But after I'm raised up, I will go before you to Galilee. And Peter said to him, even though all become deserters, I will not. And Jesus said to him, truly, I tell you, this day, this very night, before the cock crows twice, you will deny me three times. But he said vehemently, even though I must die with you, I will not deny you. And all of them said the same. And they went to the place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, sit here while I pray. And he took with him Peter, James, and John, and began to be distressed and agitated. And he said to them, I am deeply grieved, even to death. Remain here and keep awake. And going a little further, he threw himself on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, that this hour might pass from him. And he said, Abba, Father, for you all things are possible. Remove this cup from me. Yet not what I want, but what you want. And he came and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, Simon, are you asleep? Could you not keep awake 1 hour? Keep awake and pray that you may not come into the time of trial. The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak. And he went away again and prayed, saying the same words. And once more he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy, and they did not know what to say to him. He came a third time and said to them, are you still sleeping, taking your rest? Enough, the hour has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand.
Immediately, while Jesus was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived, and with him there was a crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders. Now the betrayer had given them a sign, saying, the one I will kiss is the man. Arrest him and lead him away under guard. So when Judas came, he went up to Jesus at once and said, Rabbi, and kissed him. Then they laid hands on Jesus and arrested him. But one of those who stood near drew his sword and struck the slave of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Then Jesus said to them, have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me as though I were a bandit? Day after day I was with you in the temple teaching, and you did not arrest me. But let the scriptures be fulfilled. All of them deserted him and fled. A certain young man was following Jesus, wearing nothing but a linen cloth. They caught hold of him, but he left the linen cloth and ran off naked. They took Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests, the elders, and scribes were assembled. Peter had followed Jesus at a distance right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he was sitting with the guards, warming himself at the fire. Now the chief priests and the whole council were looking for testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but they found none. For many gave false testimony against Jesus, and their testimony did not agree. Some stood up and gave false testimony against him, saying, we heard him say, I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and in 3 days I will build another not made with hands. But even on this point, their testimony did not agree. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus, have you no answer? What is it that they testify against you? But Jesus was silent and did not answer. Again, the high priest asked him, are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One? Jesus said, I am, and you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of the power and coming with the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, why do we still need witnesses? You have heard his blasphemy. What is your decision? All of them condemned Jesus as deserving death. Some began to spit on him, to blindfold him, and to strike him, saying to him, prophesy. The guards also took Jesus over and beat him. While Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came by. When she saw Peter warming himself, she stared at him and said, "You also were with Jesus, the man from Nazareth." But Peter denied it, saying, "I do not know or understand what you are talking about." And he went out into the forecourt. Then the cock crowed. And the servant girl, on seeing Peter, began again to say to the bystanders, "This man is one of them." But again, Peter denied it. Then after a little while, the bystanders again said to Peter, "Certainly you are one of them, for you are a Galilean." But Peter began to curse, and he swore an oath, saying, "I do not know this man you are talking about." At that moment, the cock crowed for the second time. Then Peter remembered that Jesus had said to him, "Before the cock crows twice, you will deny me three times." And Peter broke down and wept. As soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council. They bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered him, "You say so." Then the chief priests accused Jesus of many things. Pilate asked him again, "Have you no answer? See how many charges they bring against you." But Jesus made no further reply, so that Pilate was amazed.
Now at the festival, Pilate used to release a prisoner for them, anyone for whom they asked. Now a man called Barabbas was in prison with the rebels who had committed murder during the insurrection. So the crowd came and began to ask Pilate to do for them according to his custom. Then he answered them, "Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" For he realized that it was out of jealousy that the chief priest had handed him over. But the chief priest stirred up the crowd to have him release Barabbas for them instead. Pilate spoke to them again, "Then what do you wish me to do with the man you call the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "Crucify him." Pilate asked them, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Crucify him." So Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, released Barabbas for them, and after flogging Jesus, he handed him over to be crucified. Then the soldiers led him into the courtyard of the palace, that is, the governor's headquarters. And they called together the whole cohort, and they clothed him in a purple cloak, and after twisting some thorns into a crown, they put it on him. And they began saluting him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" They struck his head with a reed, spat upon him, and knelt down in homage to him. After mocking him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him out to crucify him. They compelled a passerby who was coming in from the country to carry his cross. It was Simon of Cyrene, the follower of Alexander and Rufus. Then they brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of a skull. And they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him, divided his clothes among them, casting lots to decide what each should take. It was 9 o'clock in the morning when they crucified him. The inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." And with him they crucified two bandits, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by derided him, shaking their heads and saying, "Aha! You who would destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from the cross." In the same way, the chief priests, along with the scribes, were also mocking him among themselves and saying, "He saved others, he cannot save himself. Let the Messiah, the King of Israel, come down from the cross now, so that we may see and believe." Those who were crucified with him also taunted him. When it was noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. At 3 o'clock, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of the bystanders heard it, they said, "Listen, he is calling for Elijah." And someone ran, filled a sponge with sour wine, put it on a stick, and gave it to him to drink, saying, "Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to take him down." Then Jesus gave a loud cry and breathed his last. And the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Now when the centurion who stood facing him saw that in this way he breathed his last, he said, "Truly this man was God's son." There were also women looking on from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James the younger, and of Joseph and Salome. These used to follow him and provided for him when he was in Galilee. And there were many other women who had come up with him to Jerusalem. When evening had come, and since it was the day of preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a respected member of the council, who was also himself waiting expectantly for the kingdom of God, went boldly to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate wondered if he were already dead, and summoning the centurion, he asked him whether he had been dead for some time. When he learned from the centurion that he was dead, he granted the body to Joseph. Then Joseph bought a linen cloth, and taking down the body, wrapped it in the linen cloth and laid it in a tomb that had been hewn out of the rock. He then rolled a stone against the door of the tomb. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, saw where the body was laid. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Wow. This is such a familiar passage. There's so much that are pieces of strong memory for me, maybe you as well. So I see this passage is filled with mystery and words and images that have become sacred and cherished in my memory. So my questions this week kind of center on that. What element of mystery are you drawn to in the reading this year? Bill, what do you have?
First of all, Sarah, thank you for having us read the whole passage, that unusually long. But what it did for me was it helped me engage with the breadth of this narrative. Taking pieces is fine, but thank you for that. I've read it a number of times since you sent it, and I'm still mulling over this narrative is packed with so much detail. The other is, the effect it had on me, Sarah, was it invited me to engage my imagination. Now, we don't baptize our imagination, but it's a gift from God. So, and now to speak directly to your question, strangely, the first mystery to me was verses in chapter 14, 50 through 52. All of them deserted Jesus, except an unnamed young man was wearing nothing but a linen cloth. They called on him. He left the linen cloth and ran off naked. Now, why is this included? I think I'm correct that only Mark records this. It's like he flops this in there. Why? No explanation is offered, so we can only speculate. It seems to me that it's possible that Mark wants to remind that early community, who may well have known who this was, and to protect his identity, he just says a certain young man. All the others deserted, but this unknown, unnamed person is willing to continue to follow, even at the risk of embarrassment. I don't know. You ask for a mystery. It's a mystery, Sarah, but it engages me. There's got to be a reason Mark included this. The other mystery is reading the breadth of the narrative. Why is it that seemingly embedded in our human, physical, mental, spiritual, and cultural DNA is the willingness to reject and destroy those whose message is the truth, even though it challenges our assumptions, and to do so in the name of God? That is a very current existential question. Thank you again for the questions and the nature of them, Sarah.
Thank you, Bill. Nicole, what are your thoughts? What element of mystery in the passage this particular time are you drawn to?
I also appreciated the opportunity to read the text in whole, Sarah. And, you know, one of the mysteries that struck me as we were reading it even this morning is that the details that jumped out to me as I was reflecting on it yesterday are different from the ones that jumped out to me this morning. I noticed different things. So I think part of the mystery of the text is just the very nature of the narrative. And Mark, who is often so brief, at least he has been, as he draws closer to the close of the gospel, becomes much more detailed in his description. And there are lots of these little nuggets that are dropped in, as Bill said. I wonder, who is that man? I'm guessing the community did know who he was, but that just seems like such an odd detail. What is the hymn that they're singing? Like, all of a sudden, like, they're singing a hymn. What hymn? What hymn are they singing? It's just all of these little things where I'm like, what is this? But again, to go to your specific question, the piece of the passage that drew me towards it in mystery was kind of one of the opening glimpses where the woman anoints Jesus with oil. I've always been drawn to that particular image. And I wonder what compelled her to do that in that moment. Who was she? I don't know who she was. Who was she? What compelled her? What drove her to do that? Was she familiar with Jesus? Was Jesus familiar with her? Even as I say that Mark becomes much more detailed as he gets closer, there's such depth to what he shares that there is also still an absence of detail that I find myself wanting to kind of lean into that mystery, because that's such an intimate gesture. It's such an intimate moment. It also seems it's a rather bold moment, I think, culturally for her, and also a bold moment because she was doing something that people tended to do in preparing bodies that were already deceased, and Jesus is sitting there. So it's also bold in that statement in terms of what it proclaims. So there's a lot of mystery around that for me.
Oh, I agree with you. So I found myself thinking about, Bill, who was that young man? Why did they, and then I also pondered the nard and the conversation around the anointing of the body, the live body, the still alive Jesus. And those were both very curious to me. This year, I found myself leaning into the conversation between Jesus and God in Gethsemane and wondering, if we only hear one part of the conversation, what was the other half of the conversation? And what might that be? And what words might have been given? Or how was the encouragement? Because this is the cusp of the most treacherous, the most painful, the most heartrending and heartbreaking part of this particular part of the story. And how is Jesus encouraged? How is he given resolve to push through this next bit And how much of that dialogue is a shared heartbreak, knowing what was coming, and then being completely, you know, I could see this nervous energy moving back and forth between the sleeping disciples and the conversation in the garden, and then back to the sleeping disciples and into the garden again. And I'm wondering how much the aloneness weighed on him as he's moving through these moments. So for me, it was I want more conversation. I need to hear, you know, the perseverance, the resolve, the trust, the faithfulness that was being articulated in that moment. I think that would be of interest and would lift my heart a little bit. My second question, excuse me, what phrase or words seem especially valuable to you this year? Nicole, I'm going to start with you.
So the thing that jumped out to me in response to this question, Sarah, is the scene where they are in the upper room and are at the table. And the words, truly, I tell you, one of you will betray me. One of you. The specificity and yet the ambiguity of that. And then jumping towards sort of the end of that, after they've sung the hymn, Jesus said to them, you will all become deserters. And what strikes me in that is that Jesus knew what was going to transpire. And Jesus in that moment had every opportunity to call out, if you will, to name names, to treat differently. And Jesus did not. And there's great value for me in that, because that seems to be such a stark contrast to the way in which we interact in the world today. You know, when people are faced with things, I think we are so quick to point to name, to call out, to belittle and to berate and to shame. And if there was any moment where that would be appropriate, I would think it would be this moment. And yet Jesus did not. And there's a lot of value for me in that. I think that there is something to learn and to take away. I think that there's a great call in the ways in which we, as those who follow Christ and call ourselves Christians, ought to conduct ourselves in certain moments. And so there at that table, there certainly is a lot of value in many other ways, but that specifically is what brought value to me today, is that Jesus made it clear, kind of like, you know who you are. I know who you are. I know, but does not publicly deride or shame the individual and is inclusive of them. So that I think there's great value. And I still am not clear precisely. It's hard to even articulate what that value is, but there's something there.
Thank you.
Thanks for that question, Sarah.
You know, I found myself being drawn to the ironies and the contrasts this year in the words. And then even more so, surprisingly endorsing that when I opened Mark Davis's blog on this passage, and he also looks specifically at a lot of those same elements. And so I find myself looking at the complexity of contrasts and the spaces between the contrasting elements. I call that the in-between. And so I'm looking at those who are scattered and those who are drawn closer in these moments. I'm looking at those who keep watch and sleep, and those who are watchful and see, and the contrast in that. I look at the weight of Jesus's agony and the weight of those eyelids. Those who recognize Jesus as the Christ and those who do not. Those who seem to hold Jesus with affection and those that do not. Those that were called bandits and those who acted like bandits. Those who were regarded for keeping the law, breaking it, and those who keep the laws are found guilty. So this contrast between what is perceivable and what is seen, what is then understood. And I think that this, interestingly, feels a little bit like the book of John, when John tells us one thing and we hear it as one thing, but then we understand it to be a second thing or even much more layered than it is. So I find myself considering these contrasts and this irony and finding myself more uncomfortable than comfortable with this text. So, Bill, what do you find, what words or phrases do you find especially valuable this year?
Well, in my emotional dictionary, valuable is a positive word, but I will springboard off of what you and Nicole reminded of us of, and in the words, I guess it's the movie Star Wars, your questions tended to lead me to the dark side. Perhaps because of the shape of our current toxic public and political environment, I discern valuable demonstrations of human brokenness. Valuable because they do not allow us to fantasize unduly about human goodness. For example, in the passage you had us read began with the high holy days in the Jewish world, Passover, the unleavened bread festival. And in that season, the religious leaders are looking for a way to arrest Jesus, Mark says, by stealth and kill him because they didn't want to upset the people. So they're manipulating in what was to be perhaps in the Jewish world the highest spiritual religious experience. And that juxtaposing of a high spiritual season and plotting to murder God's prophet makes it clear that we tend to justify our destructive actions, asserting that it's the will of God. Thus, it's valuable for me, Sarah, as a stark encounter with how we distort the faith we claim to embrace and live. And I believe all of us do that. We're in this narrative. The other then more shocking is that one of the disciples, the treasurer of the group, worked to betray Jesus. Now, there's a lot of speculation about what motivated him. I don't think scripture tells us. Whatever motivated him, he sat with Jesus. He observed Jesus's miracles, his caring ministry, and yet again, somehow he justified participating in his destruction. And then the poignant scene of Jesus in Gethsemane, the disciples couldn't stay awake, and then his crucifixion, the darkness came over the land, Jesus cried out in another language, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" A powerful demonstration of the full humanity of Jesus Christ. And especially, as you said, Nicole, his ability not to retaliate, not to demean. That's a stretch for us, especially in this season. That's what I got, Sarah.
Thank you, Bill. My last question is, what image or images carry treasure for you this year? For me, the words, "the darkness came over the land." The temple curtain was torn from top to bottom. the centurion who acknowledges this must be the Son of God. Simon of Cyrene, who happens to be walking by, carries a cross. Joseph of Arimathea, who asks for the body and buries it out of respect. And the women who watch and bear witness and tend, you know, that's the language that's used, that they are the ones that take care of Jesus. Those are some of the images that are treasure filled for me this year. What about you, Bill?
Interestingly, Sarah, you picked the same two I did. First of all, the curtain of the temple torn from top to bottom. That's all we have. But I think this is an example of we have no way today to really understand the impact that had on the first audience. A ripping apart that broke physically the barrier between the high priest and that one's special relationship with God, supposedly, and the rest of the people. That's a powerful image. And then the women, I highlighted for myself some phrases. The women looking on from a distance, many other women. Mary Magdalene and mother of Joseph saw where the body was laid, and then Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so that they might go and anoint Jesus. The men ran away and failed, but the women were present. I think, again, in that culture, that had to be something that rattled people's cages. If you're looking for a hero, it's not the men. The persons of strength and courage and caring are the women. So those are, I think, even relevant today, the contrast between patriarchy and, if I may say it this way, the God-given ability of all of us, but I think especially of women as mothers, as women. There's a connectedness and a courage and a strength that we men would do well to emulate.
Thank you, Bill. Nicole, you get last word. What images or image do you find carry treasure for you this year?
So I loved your answers. The thing that jumped out at me when I was considering the question, Sarah, was really the contrast of both the humanity of Jesus, which we see and kind of the crying out and some of the images that you had lifted up, you know, the heaviness of the eyelids. But that with the strength and the steadfastness throughout this entire narrative of Jesus in the face of persecution and derision is the image that holds a lot of value and treasure for me as I walk away from this text. Again, I mean, not to be redundant, but Jesus never stoops to the level of his adversaries in any way. And that's so powerful. And in verse 5 of the 15th chapter that we read, we have the verse that Pilate was amazed. And it has me wonder what Pilate was amazed at. And I wonder if Pilate was amazed at this strength and steadfastness that he was bearing witness to, that Jesus was able to carry out and hold on to, when that is in such stark contrast to what likely he and other people of power and authority chose to exercise when faced with adversaries in the moment. So I'm going to carry with me that strength and the steadfastness that Jesus was able to maintain.
Hard to hold.
Yeah,
I agree. So I want to say a word of thanks to John Wells, who sent us an email this week and reminded us of some comforting words. So I'm going to close with, this podcast is made possible by Palmacia Presbyterian Church, which is located at 3501 West San Jose Street in Tampa, Florida. And for more information, you can visit www.palmacia.org. That's PALMACEIA.ORG. And at that site, you'll find a lot to learn about our church family, including engaging in traditional contemporary and worship services, wonderful sermons, beautiful music, a variety of Christian education choices, and fellowship opportunities to engage in. So we commend that site to you. You're always welcome, and we'll see you next time.